Jackson. I'm the author of The End of My World and Exploited. So I'm a survivor of child sexual exploitation. Been out of exploitation now for, I'm now 28, so quite a long time. And I've been quite vocal. You know, I'm somebody who has been very vocal for about 14 years, actually, about my experiences. But being very lucky that I've been listened to, and I've got to say I'm probably in the minority for that, not the majority, because there is still a lot of young people who aren't listened to, who often struggle to get their views across in a way that professionals want to listen to them. And because of that, that just makes them more angry makes them more isolated as well, and puts them in even more of a dark place. I actually disclosed my sexual exploitation first when I was 13, and I disclosed multiple rapes, and that's when I expected to be listened to. I knew that rape was a crime. I knew that it was serious, however, I would say that at 13 I didn't know just how serious it was. So I disclosed simply because I was put into a sort of a corner where I'd got no other choice but to disclose what was happening. I talked to the police, I talked to social care, I talked to youth services, and at that point I was, because of my disclosure, put into probably every service that there was. I was given a paediatrician through the NHS, a gynaecologist, so I had loads of professional people around me, often too many. You know, a lot of people say, oh, did you feel like your life was really out of control? And I said, no, actually, I felt like it was too in control, because I had an appointment every day for something. You know, I knew what I was doing, and I was 13, I just wanted to be 13. I'd had my experiences, but I wanted to just be a child. And actually disclosing took that away from me. It took the ability to be a child away from me. They didn't listen to what I said, which actually did isolate me further. And because of that, I continued to be sexually exploited. And the sexual exploitation actually got worse because they didn't listen. I was taken out of the country for my own safety by my parents, because nobody wanted to do anything about it. And I come back at 17, and I sort of decided I got a publishing contract, which I was really lucky about, and that is probably what gave me the biggest voice of all, is that I got a publishing contract, and because it was published, my story, and it went worldwide, people all of a sudden started to listen. And interestingly enough as well, people thought that because I'd been given a publishing contract and it was in a book and people could buy it in a bookshop, that I must be really intelligent and have something worth saying that's worth listening to. And that I didn't have, you know, 4 years previous to that, but I was always the same person. So, you know, when we talk about participation and listening to young people, it is about listening to everybody. And not just people who fit into a category because they might come from a bit of a better background, so they might be able to express themselves in a better way that fits into our agenda, because actually everybody deserves a voice. And a lot of people who struggle to communicate and struggle to express their feelings often need more of a voice than the ones that do, because often their experiences are far, far worse than a lot of people who want to, you know, want to be the forefront. I've met a lot of young women in particular, and the ones who are really angry and do struggle have had horrific experiences that even I couldn't imagine. I was lucky that I actually met Camille, and I've done a lot of things with the University of Bedfordshire and the National Working Group, and they give me a voice even more and let me sort of feed in what I wanted. You know, what did I want at that point that I disclosed? What would have made my life better? Because that's what it's about. That's what participation and listening to young people is ultimately about how can we make that experience better? That when they decide to disclose and they want to talk because something horrific has happened to them, what can make that journey smoother? And it's not about making it a journey where there's no bumps in the road, because when you've had them experiences, that's not going to happen. I often say it's like labour, you know. I've been, when I was pregnant, I knew that I was going to have to squeeze a melon out. And there was no way, other way of saying it, there was nothing else that I couldn't decide that actually, no, I don't want to do this now. I just want to go back to how I was. And it's probably going to be the most painful thing of my life. But what makes that experience better, what makes you say I had a really good labour, is not actually, you know, that you might have had a C-section or you had a natural birth or whatever. It's about that person in that room with you, that midwife, and how they respond to you and your needs. You know, young people have been exploited, have had horrific experiences. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy to disclose, to say what you want, to work with people, to often go through the justice system. But if you've got a person who listens to you and responds to your needs, that makes all the difference, and that's what participation is about. I was lucky in that respect that finally I was listened to. And also, you know, I've been through court quite recently, and my officers listened to everything I wanted. You know, they said to me, what do you want? They didn't come in and tell me what I wanted, they asked me what I wanted. And that made me trust them enough for them to actually put me in that courtroom for me to give my evidence. Had I not trusted them, I probably wouldn't have turned up on that morning. You know, I wouldn't have been there when they come to collect me for court. And to have people engage, listening is key. And I think, you know, CJ made a massive valid point about how the media puts images out there, and it's like if they don't fit into that, then we just can't work with them because they're unstable, they're very aggressive, they're dangerous, and we sort of put them in different categories, and we relabel them, and they don't want to be labelled, they're just young people or children, and they want to be carefree and have a life and be safe and secure, and the media does do that, you know, they help label and what it should look like, and everybody is individual. You know, every young person or child who experiences this is an individual and should be treated as one. What works for one doesn't work for the other, and that is why it's so important to listen to everybody's voice and not just the selected few. Some people won't want to share their experiences, but actually listening to everybody is so important. And always being careful of when giving them a voice, not actually removing their voice for them, you know, from them, by saying that we're giving you a voice, but actually using what they say. And that's why, you know, reports that Camille's done, that Jenny's done, when they use direct quotes that young people actually say and not turn that into their own words and their interpretation, that is so important. Because in order to get it right and to shape better practice and services, it's got to come direct from them of what they really want, and it's not about whitewashing it or making it sound better. Because one thing that I can tell you is exploitation is ugly. The name actually makes it sound better than what it is, but it is multiple rapes of young people by multiple people on a massive scale, and not only are they multiply raped, but many are sexually tortured. Being put in a room and waiting and knowing that somebody's going to come through that door in a bit, and you don't know how many are going to come through or what they are going to do or what they want from you, is the most, you know, painful and hardest experience of anybody's life. So to actually, for the work and the practice to reflect that, and not, you know, I get really annoyed when people say the boyfriend model. You know, it wasn't a boyfriend. It's not what, I've had lots of boyfriends and they've never treated me like that. You know, we need to say it as it is in order to get the correct practice and things in place. Because how can we expect people to talk and want to participate if that what the end result is not any good for them. You know, nobody would do that, and that's what it's about. It's about making it better. Things have got better, and it's about continuing that. And actually, participation groups shape practice that, you know, in the way that it should be shaped by the young people who use that service, who want to respond to it, and that can make a difference for many. Thank you.